The weather can do as it chooses. We'll stay inside and scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Dr. Robin Throne is both a novelist and a poet, as is Garrison Keillor. We'll hear from both of them today on Scribble. Welcome to the program, Robin. It's good to see you.
Thank you. Very honored to be here with you guys.
Well, you won a bunch of awards, and I am so ignorant in this field of distinguished literary prizes. The most prize I can get is for reading a book. but Roald knows all about that. You were the fourth winner. Was it of, what is the award? Come on, the writer who set up a,
David Collins, yes.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, okay. You were a winner of that award and several others. Is that for novels or for poetry?
I probably can only claim credit for the David R. Collins Literary Achievement Award because of the generosity of Nancy Ann Schaefer, an Illinois poet who wrote the nomination for me. And it was just a very generous nomination in that she credited really also the support of writers that mm-hmm. have done, thankfully through the Midwest Writing Center.
But a novelist and a poet, do those two go together?
They do for me. Yeah, I'm not a heavy prose writer when it comes to fiction. I've been writing in a minimalist style for many, many years, and it borders on poetry and on prose, so it's sort of in that hybrid realm. And then recently, this trend of flash fiction has given me a home for the style of writing that I do, so I can finally call it something people understand.
Is that something you adopted deliberately, minimalist, or did you get fascinated with it?
I think it was just because in my graduate studies, I have a master's in creative writing from Minnesota State University out of Mankato, and it was in that era that I was writing a lot of poetry and getting a lot of poems published, but I knew that really, we all have these books in us, and we want to tell a story in a different genre or form, and that hybrid minimalism, wanting to engage the reader, more than giving them all the details is what appealed to me. So I continue to...
Well, define minimalist.
I think that, for all of us that are on beaches right now somewhere this summer, we want that novel that's going to give us all the details and engage us and so we can escape in it and be lost within it. From minimalist fiction, we expect the reader to be a direct contributor to the process, so that we're giving them more the form of words like we do in poetry to invoke their own visualization process. And so it's very concise, dense-packed words as a way to sort of invoke imagery where the reader has to be a direct participant. And that takes a lot of work for those of us read literary fiction.
It sounds like sneaky poetry to me.
Sort of. Okay, yes.
Do you have an example along that we could...
Yeah. The other award that, Don, you were mentioning is I just won this fiction chapbook prize out of Denver from a literary journal out there that does an annual prize, and it's called The Cube and Other Flashlings, I call them, that they're very dense, short segments of less than 500 words. Hmm. Would you like me to read one of these? This is one segment in The Cube, and it's called Kudos. Yesterday, Marilyn from the web team brought me lunch from Snyder's Deli, and I had to ask, what's up, as if I did not know what her weekly check-in would bring me. We're screwed, she said in her usual succinct e-commerce way. Why's that? Wrong gender. Yep, I replied, biting into a half-Snyder Club on Asiago. This was a fact Marilyn, our only female web developer, needed to confirm at least once per week, even though she was an was the in-house expert on pay inequities across divisions. She had at least 10 years on me, so you would think she had verified this over many more work years than I. But I concurred, like always, to keep her talking. I knew there was more. "Big boy's going to blame you again," she forecasted. "Why, this time," I asked politely and kept on chewing. No eye contact was ever needed with Marilyn, who peered out over a shoulder-height wall as if she were on foxhole lookout for a sniper ready to take off our heads. "Barry and Media Design offered to take you down." Barry was a long, sad story, and a plagiarist who had failed quality checks so many times, I often wondered if he ever passed any. Last month, he had used code from a major competitor's site as if someone, me, would fail to notice tags from Baker and Morgan around for the past century. "Right," I said. "Didn't hear it from me," she said, then knocked her knuckles thrice on my desk, which was the usual cue that a VP or higher was out checking crops in the cube farm. "Didn't," I echoed with a musical, multisyllabic response as I swung my chair back round to face an oversized flat screen that could be viewed three aisles away. "Jennifer," Rick, the VP of sales, too chipper, synthetic voice hovered above my crown, and I kept on typing. "Always hard at it, aren't we, my dear?" I nodded once and kept on typing. "Our star," I thought to myself before he even said it aloud.
One of the things that fascinates me about that is the size of that book. You call it a chaplet?
A chapbook, yes.
It's a chapbook. What is a chapbook?
A chapbook is a form of a book that is, very short. And in the history of chapbooks, there were commonly very short forms that were produced very economically. And the group out in Denver, they still leather hand tie their chapbooks. Some of us have gone to using perfect bound formats and more traditional formats for them, but they're a way to present a short piece of work without a full book length.
Well, you've been involved in doing chapbooks too. You not only write, but you've encouraged others to write. You were involved in something, was it called 918 Studio?
918 Studio, yeah. It was a small literary press. I started out of LeClaire because of the LeClaire writers that group that I was part of had a group of poems that we all wanted to publish, of course. So we did it as a fundraiser for the library and sold them all very quickly. And it was a great fundraiser for the LeClaire Library where we were meeting at the time. And since then, I released several chapbooks of poetry, tried to find one local author at least each year to produce and submit to award competitions and make available. And then now Lori Perkins, that you may know, a local publisher, has acquired 918 and calls it 918 Studio Press. So they're continuing that work.
You know, I've heard the term chapbook long time past. And it, to me, when you say chapbook, I think of something ancient. Is the chapbook, has it been around all along, or is it newly in vogue, or what?
Well, I think the history goes back to 19th century.
Oh, at least. I think it goes back before that. Way back at the beginning of America, one of the ways in which Americans really, the British even more, argued was in the press, right? And they would do it with little teeny things called broadsides, right? Mm-hmm. And then I think a chapbook is just a little longer broadside before you get to something you could call a book.
But is this a revival of that form, or has it been
around? It's always been around, I think. A chapbook, I think of about 10 poems or something like that.
Well, then why haven't I seen one?
Well, here's one. You've seen
okay,
one.
Yeah, I see them now. I miss this phenomenon.
How long were you involved in 918 Studio?
We started in 2010, and Lori just acquired it last August.
Okay.
Yeah, so about 5 years.
So are you involved in it at all anymore? Or
I am not. Great supporter of them and the work they continue. So I'm waiting for Tricia Yoryu, a local poet, was their first release, I believe, under the new ownership, and I think they have a book coming out.
Oh, we'll have to get
year.
A hold of her to her scribble too.
Yeah, we punish everyone. There's to write or print or anything. You have a novel there.
Yes.
Her Kind.
Yes.
When did that come out?
This came out in 2013. I had won a literary fiction award for my minimalism in 2010 from a group called The Writer's Well in Georgia. And they gave me a writer's retreat as was part of that prize that I worked a great deal on this manuscript and then finished it 2 years later in 2013. Story of a Scott County, one of the first Scott County families to immigrate into Iowa.
Mm-hmm. Did I read in a review that that is also a sort of minimalist treatment?
Yes, it is.
So you have your vogue now. You have your style.
I like to believe that, yes, it exists. Once, you know, once a book is produced, I guess it exists, and I continue to work on it.
Mm-hmm. I think Mad Magazine once published a minimalist Call of the Wild. It was woof, woof.
Okay, there we go. Imagine what you will that.
How can a novel be minimalist?
I like to think of it as the prose carries over from one small segment to the next. So it is sort of this flash fiction combination where I have an actual historical document that describes a setting in time and then followed by a very short narrative prose that you would probably say okay. Looks like a poem on some of these segments and then may go into the next section with another actual historical document about Iowa that is the next voice in the story, so that it's not really an epistolary novel so much as just this placement of for the reader in time and context and then into the short, prose.
Like
some
a slideshow? I'm trying to get a handle. I'm fascinated by...
Well, the thing is, you've used flash a couple of times. What is that?
I'm using flash probably because of the trend over, you know, the last 8 years or so that the term flash has been used, especially by, again, fiction, literary writing competitions or others, that any work that's less than 1,000 words, and I found one journal that said anything less than 500 words is called a flashling. So somewhere in that, you know, 500 to 1,000 words is considered that you can tell a story within that number of words is an exercise for a writer to think, you know, how am I going to tell that full story?
Aren't you afraid you'll shrink all the way down to Twitter if you...
there's a lot of great poetry on Twitter. So, yeah, we should start. There's probably a lot of good flash on Twitter.
Right.
That's this phenomenon of brevity. You know, I believe in brevity. I don't actually practice it that much, but I believe in brevity. But I'm amazed at how that has taken off.
It's, yeah.
That you are limited to, what, 47 characters or something like that?
144 for a 45. Tweet, right, or something?
Yeah.
I have no idea. I'm not in that flock. I don't Twitter or tweet, so I don't really know.
But that doesn't mean you have to write it fast, does it?
No, it takes a long time.
Longer time than to...
I think so. There's you know, that creative process takes a while to...
And probably longer to write, ironically, to write something that's flash than something that isn't.
Robin, what started you on writing?
I'm one of those people that had a wonderful eighth grade English teacher that, inspired me and encouraged me. And from there, I always knew that it was there and then, you know, have the curse of writing. You know, it's something, no matter what else we're doing, it's there and it comes to us and we can't put it aside.
I've been aware of that and I wondered why I never had that particular curse. Mine was always volubility, but not writing. And I just sit in amazement at people who will... You used to sit down at a typewriter and fingers would fly for a couple of hours and then just churn out stuff. And I think, how do you do that? It just amazes me. But it seems to flow quite naturally in people who are writers, who know they are writers and practice the art constantly. Are you working on something now?
I am. I'm working on a third novel. My second novel is in manuscript form and has been receiving some of the most beautiful rejection letters I've ever received in my career. So I keep that one circulating agents and small independent presses and While that's in play, I have to keep going. So I'm working on something that actually came out of a research study. In my day job, I'm a researcher. So my institution funded me to go to the University of Connecticut and do some archival research. And now I'm putting that into the third story. So trying to bring those two things together.
Is that how you get your inspiration? Just something occurs to you, or you're doing something and it triggers an idea in your mind?
I have learned over the years, because I used to be a very busy corporate workaholic, and I learned then that if I didn't capture those seeds and begin for them to germinate somewhere in that creative process, I lost them. So now I'm very conscious about capturing that moment of something, especially when it's invokes something that I know is worth looking at later. I tend to write it down, no matter what I'm doing.
Are you one of those disciplined people who writes every day?
My curse is early morning.
That is a curse.
Not 5 a.m. to 9 a.m., if it's not captured within that window, it's not going to come the rest of the day. So fortunately, I have other things I like to do and that I do during the day. But yeah, I have that early morning.
Before we run out of time, let's hear one of your poems.
Okay.
Are they the same kind of brevity run things like the flash poet?
Well, let's hear
fiction.
Yeah, my poems aren't real long. I'd say this was, you know, we were talking about Mankato earlier.
Right.
This was I won a poetry contest in Mankato for an unfinished poem. So, and this one reminds me of our current political climate. So I will read it. It's called Machismo. Unfinished. Your U.S. government issue number 2 pencil point snapped as you traced the silhouette of my body and cursed when it didn't match any of the 8s in the 7 figures on line 32 of your phony federal form you filed late last year. With the charisma of a congressional order, you stopped the flow of women's blood as red as the tie on your legislative assistant who grabbed the 20-pound paper too fast off the laser printer, smudging his starched white cuff, mimicking the aprons of unemployed pressmen everywhere.
Whoa.
I like that.
I like that. Yeah, I do.
That a lot. What's the name of that chapbook?
This is something I put together of my era of many published poems. I call it I Was There Once. And it's
excellent.
Sort of a way to put closure to, that era.
You were here once, and we'll wait to see what that generates. Robin Throne, thank you very much for being with us today. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you both.
And you have taught me so much about flashes and flashlights. Now let's see what we can learn from Garrison Keillor. Support for Writer's Almanac on WVIK comes from the Mississippi Valley Regional Blood Center, working together with volunteer donors to provide blood products and services to hospitals throughout the region. Information at bloodcenter.org. And thus we dive into the book bag, and who's lurking there at the bottom of it but Roll Tweet?
Well, I have a book here that I just finished that another one of the whole library that Nan Carter keeps sending me from Berkeley. She listens to this program, and it always reminds her of a book that I need to read. And if you remember anything about Nan Carter, you know that her books are always Arabian or African or Palestinian. But I just finished one of the better books, I think, that Nan has ever sent me by a Nigerian writer, Sarah Ladipo, L-A-D-I-P-O, Manyika, M-A-N-Y-I-K-A. The title of the book is Like a Mule Bringing Ice Cream to the Sun. And I finally decided, after listening to Robin, that what we have here is a minimalist novel.
Oh, really?
It is short. It's 120, 130 pages. And I'm not even sure it's a Nigerian novel, because Manyiko has studied in England, France, and Kenya. She has a PhD from the University of California at Berkeley, and she's taught for 30 years at San Francisco State. But this is the story of a woman The main character is Moreo Da Silva, who is Nigerian, has immigrated from Nigeria, is a retired professor at San Francisco State, is 75, lives by herself in a rent-controlled apartment, totally self-contained and self-controlled. She's run away from a husband that that wasn't doing her any good and has really made a thing for herself, totally independent, but not terribly rich. And the story that takes place is that she falls one day and breaks a hip and ends up in the hospital and suddenly finds herself at the age of 75, as a lot of aging people do, dependent on other people, at least for a brief time. Somebody to push the wheelchair, somebody to take her to the hospital, somebody to get her groceries and stuff. It doesn't make much of this, and it isn't something that's going to last, but it is really a wonderful story. I mean, it's moving, and without being schmaltzy or sentimental, a moving story of what it means to suddenly find yourself proud of your independence, but dependent on everybody, from the homeless person that lives across the street to people that have been your friends and now on whom you have to depend to do the cooking, at least for a brief time. And it is just so well done. The point of view varies from the woman herself, Moreo, and all of the people that are influenced by the fact that she suddenly needs help and needs aid. Mm-hmm. But it's not sad. It is, I guess, minimalist. I mean, you have to put your own self into the character. But it is really, really well done.
I think my acquaintance with minimalism comes through music, which is highly repetitive and little phrases done over and over and over again. So,
well, there is a minimalism in music, too, isn't there? I mean,
yeah,
movement.
That's what I know from music. But it, to me, it's phrases repeated over and over and over again. But minimalist literature, I have to get my head around that. That's a different thing. But I guess it means you suggest and people must
infer. It means something. I still don't have a handle on it. It means something. You know, when Hemingway started writing, his work was described as minimalist because he was so few and such simple words. In contrast, let's say, to Faulkner, who has a paragraph that goes on, I mean, a sentence that goes on for nine paragraphs.
Or Proust, who has
a paragraph
that goes on for a whole book.
But what Robin and what this contemporary movement of minimalism means is something quite different from that. So I'm going to have to look into that. But this novel sounds exactly like the kind of thing that Robin was talking about. It's very short, very brief, beautifully done.
Mm-hmm. And what's the title again?
Like a Mule Bringing Ice Cream to the Sun. That has to do with a Nigerian folktale.
Oh, okay. Well, we have a recommendation there that I don't think we'd have gotten any other way if it hadn't been for Nan. And we've pretty much gotten way through the time today. Thank you very much for tuning in. For Roll Tweet, I'm Don Wooten. We'll be back next week for another Scribble.